Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome, everybody, to the Chuck and Julie Show, True Straight Up. Wartime, apparently, maybe. Maybe we can give a nice four this time to sometime this week. But we're brought to you, as always, during wartime by...
AmericaCitizenPress.com, a great conservative website, and Denver Cinegenics and Dr. Julie McCallum, the Chuck and Julie Show. Want to let you know you can get all of our shows on whatever the podcast of your choice is. All of the links are at chuckandjulie.com. And also you can catch all the shows at BBS Radio too. Just go to bbsradio.com and you'll see the Chuck and Julie Show there. I'd love to have you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Parler, Getter, you name it. We're all over the place. It's an interesting, well, Chuck and I have a little bit perhaps of a different take of what's going on. We're all of a sudden, in case...
Julie seems to be against wars for some reason. And this is a great chance. You know, we got out of the last war that we were in for 20 years, just a few months ago.
That didn't go well, though.
Well, they never go well. But we haven't been in a war for 3 or 4 months. And so now it's the first good opportunity over something.
Well, you
know, you've got to get the war machine going.
Here's the thing. If you like didn't pay any attention over the weekend or spend all your time like us watching some great actually NFL football games, you would have thought, okay, the big stories of the day, we still have a lot of problems in this country. We've got the supply chain issues. We've got runaway inflation. We've got crime. 22 people shot in Chicago over the weekend. A couple people shot in Denver. COVID, for Pete's sakes, that's kind of what's going on with that, right? You would think that those were important topics. But if you woke up this morning, it's like, no, we're going to war. We're going to war with Ukraine. It's like, what the heck happened there?
Excellent.
And my theory,
Raytheon, all the defense contractors are all just popping the champagne. We've got, what did Flynn say? We'd just bumble into 100 million people getting killed. Who cares?
We got some great time, but this is my theory. I don't know if you guys, if you haven't, your movie assignment, this is going to be the movie section, is to watch between now and Wednesday, because we can talk more about it Wednesday, Wag the Dog. It's a movie years ago, but if you watch it, we watched it just a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so true today.
It used to be a parody, now going, but it's accurate.
Now it's actually a documentary, exactly. It stars Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, and the premise of the story is that the election, i.e. midterms, is coming up. The president has been caught in a scandal involving a Firefly girl sitting on his lap. And so they hire their head local kind of Ted Trimpa guy, Robert De Niro, they come up with a great idea to start a war. Now, not a real war, mind you.
Not even start a war. So how do we get this off the front pages? How do we move it down so it's off there? And so he brings in a Hollywood producer played by Dustin Hoffman just beautifully. And he kind of, well, you know, war with who? Well, I don't know. Some Eastern European country.
Albania.
Oh, Albania. Ukraine. It doesn't matter.
And I swear, you guys, I do remember eating a cough drop. I really think that is in part what's going on here. I mean, how did we go from like last Thursday, we're all kind of, we got enough issues, but none of us were thinking about a nuclear war, for Pete's sakes. And all of a sudden, Monday morning, boom, war. But you know what? Just like in the movie where they open the page the day after Dustin Hoffman launches, they have, you know, Willie Nelson writes a song for the war. Woody Harrelson plays badly. The war hero goes south. I mean, it's hilarious. But when you watch it, you're like, wait a minute. And then they gleefully open the papers the next day. And they're like, look, Firefly Girl. Nowhere to be found in the front section.
Inflation, nowhere to be found.
That's it today.
Everything else is
you look at all the news sites. Nobody's talking about COVID anymore.
And we've united the country here. Fox News is just enthusiastic about this on their website as
MSNBC.
There's CNN.
And guys, I tell you what, there is one thing the media loves more than a deadly disease that's going to kill off humanity, and that's a war. Every reporter
good war.
Everywhere, particularly in Europe.
It'll be over by Christmas of next year.
If you watch the movie, you have to call and tell us if you think you agree. But I mean, every reporter wants to be a war correspondent. How fun is that? You don't want to be a war correspondent in Iraq, though. You can't even really be a girl war correspondent
there.
You'd
be one in Paris.
I swear, that's exactly what's going on. And we cannot let ourselves be bamboozled. I'm going to read a quote, then we'll get to kind of your comments.
Of course we can.
This is from Tucker Carlson, and this is absolutely true. He said, we're really going to fight a war over some corrupt Eastern European country that is strategically irrelevant to us with everything else that's going on in our country? Tucker, that's the point. With everything else that's going on in our country, Biden needs a war. He needs a good, fast war against the evil Russians. I mean, the Democrats have been pounding on the Russians forever.
All right, but look back at our own glorious history. We all know that we're a peace-loving country, that war only comes at the very last, very, very last choice or option to try to avoid it all. So you just look back at our great wars. Now, of course, we have our WMD war. Oh, okay,
well,
so there was no WMD.
Well,
it doesn't matter. But let's go back to our more glorious. But, you know, the War of 1812, we started that war because why? Can anybody put it up on our thing here?
Does anybody have a guess why we said, I don't know.
How about the Mexican-American War?
Thomas knows why.
Give it to us why.
And Sandra's saying, meanwhile, let's talk about our flipping utility bills, grocery bills, property taxes. All right, TJ, we wanted to move in on Canada.
That's right.
There we go.
But that was, what awful thing did Canada do to us to want us to start the war? Well, I don't know. Who knows? But it wasn't our fault. The Korean War started by blowing up our own ship.
Yeah. There we go.
Well, that's the Spanish-American War. We pulled that one off. It was a great one where a ship blew up in Havana Harbor. It appears probably because of internal engine problems. And we went to war on that. A worldwide war. We took over the Philippines, took over Cuba. Yay! We got Teddy Roosevelt going up San Juan Hill. Just great stuff. And how about World War One? Well, they sank the Lusitania. We love the Lusitania. Oh, that wasn't our ship. That doesn't matter. It was a Lusitania, and it was a British ship, and so we're gonna. I mean, we might as well go to war on the basis that
this is our
deep thinking. You see, we want to protect the sovereign right of the Ukraine to want to join NATO. Now, NATO doesn't want the Ukraine because it has no assets themselves and they create all kinds of problems and it's kind of a blackball system. So they're not joining NATO, but we want to preserve their right to want to join NATO. And if we kill 100 million people protecting that sacred right, it'd be well worth it.
Jacob, World War II was started by not returning a telegraph message. So that's kind of look at this because I got to admit initially, and this caught me flat-footed too, like I'm sure it's catching a lot of people waking up going, wait, we're going to war with Ukraine? Wow. Where is Ukraine? And isn't that like where Hunter Biden has his issues?
He doesn't have any more. He's not on that board anymore.
So we can go to war.
We're okay then.
But so I started doing the research and I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is, I understand it, is Russia's problem with Ukraine becoming part of NATO. It'd be kind of, so then the NATO would put all of its war bases like right on Russia's border. So it'd be kind of like if Russia wanted to start putting missile bases and forces and stuff, or in Mexico or in Canada, right?
We should have a right to do that.
You could kind of see where Russia might have a point there. And like you said, I mean, Ukraine, somebody's saying, what does Ukraine have? Afghanistan had opium. Nothing. And a bunch of corruption.
Nothing.
Nothing.
No oil,
and that's why
no,
I'm
nothing.
Saying, I don't even know if we're going to actually go to war or start war. If this is what this has done, just look at the headlines across the board. No COVID, no inflation, there's 72% of the people think the country's going the wrong way. That should be huge, right? Nope, not even mentioning it because now we're going to war. The networks are all happy to pivot. Everybody's sick of COVID anyway. And it is, it's exactly like, you know, they said in this movie, Wag the Dog. You guys got to watch that movie. Everybody loves a good war, right? I mean, the neocons of it, you get a good song out of it. You get to be patriotic. You have to tie ribbons around things.
You get to kill a lot of males, which makes the female gene pool bigger for you guys. I mean, after Napoleonic Wars, there was like 15% more women than men. So that's another, well, especially if you're not battle age.
Here's the good point. And Sandra, this is the key. And where in the hell are all the Republican politicians? I don't hear
them jumping on, because
war is good for the people who lobby them,
McCall,
right?
The guy from Texas is always coming on. And of course, we love Liz Cheney. She's always up for a good war. So
hey, and we've got Wesson said, I tweeted yesterday, I wanted to get ahead of this. And I said, World War III didn't start itself. Wes, if you want to go ahead and because you pop your mic open, if you can talk a little bit, if you want to. And while you're doing that, I want to show you, this is how serious it's got. Remember Vindman? He was the guy in the National Security Council who testified at Trump's impeachment trial that he heard Trump doing corrupt things.
He had somebody tell him.
Well, yeah.
It was secondhand hearsay.
Hearsay about Trump doing bad things with Zelensky, Ukraine's president, and then admitted, okay, well, I just made that all up. This is what, so MSNBC, of course, he's now a guest host. He's, you know, their star.
Excellent.
They interviewed him today. If we could please play the Vindman tapes. This is what Vindman says we've got coming probably by Wednesday.
Please, Colonel Vindman, and then tell me what you think about what happened today.
So I think it's important to note that I think we're basically just on the cusp of war. I think it's all but certain in my mind that there's going to be a large European war on the order of magnitude of World War II.
That's
large. Air power, sea power, massive ground forces offensives. And my concern now is making sure that the United States is postured for that outcome. I think there's little to be done to avoid it at this point. I think the U.S. was over-reliant on a deterrent based on reactionary policy. So if Russia does this, these are the consequences that it could bear out. In reality, the Russians have significant reasons to doubt U.S. resolve in this space. I think that at this point, we also need to start preparing for the day after, the day of that outcome, for the humanitarian catastrophe that's going to unfold in Europe.
There we go.
Contingencies of having to reassure U.S. allies in Eastern Europe. They're going to want some U.S. presence there to ensure that Russia's objectives are, in fact, limited to Ukraine. And we're going to have to come to the reality that there are going to be seismic effects on the geopolitical landscape, the economic landscape, that the American people should be aware of, because there are going to be direct impacts on the U.S. economy, on U.S. national security. And we should just be doing everything we can to prepare for that and do whatever we think we can do at this point, maybe to avert it. But it's the ball is in Putin's court.
I love it.
They're not going to try to avert it.
We're
preparing troops. We're telling the embassy people they have to get out.
And then the Ukraine says, hey, wait a minute. They're safer in Kiev than they are L.A. or Chicago.
Yeah,
and they're
right.
Well, I mean, and people go, the Ukrainian government said, no, there's no, you know, they've been building up since last April. There's nothing new. What are we doing?
Well, and at that point, if we could go ahead and play the ABC News video, please, Thomas. This is what Ukraine has to say about all of this.
On the escalating crisis with Russia over Ukraine, as the Biden administration orders some Americans to evacuate Ukraine with Russian forces massed on the border.
President Biden is also considering sending U.S. troops to the region. We're covering all the angles of this developing story from Ukraine and Washington. We begin with our senior foreign correspondent, Ian Pennell, who is just back from the front lines. Good morning, Ian.
Yeah, good morning, George. There are reports Russia is planning significant military action against Ukraine. Those are the words from this latest advisory from the State Department. Now NATO putting extra forces on standby and sending additional ships and fighter jets to Eastern Europe, as the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine tells some staff and relatives to leave.
U.S. officials ordering the evacuation of family members of U.S. embassy staff in Ukraine. Some non-essential personnel also allowed to leave. The State Department writing, U.S. citizens in Ukraine should consider departing now using commercial or other privately available transportation options. Now the UK following suit, also ordering some embassy staff to leave. This morning, the Ukrainian government criticizing the U.S. decision as premature and excessively cautious.
Premature and excessively cautious.
They are not doing their job on ratcheting up this war effort here.
It's a thing. And watch the movie Wag the Dog, because I swear that's what's going on here. And in the movie, when you watch it, they said, well, what are we going to do? How do we fight a war? And they're like, we're not going to fight a war. We only need this for a few days until the election. We only need this until people quit talking about COVID and quit talking about this. And, you know, we can gear up and make all the neocons happy. But I just...
Or Vindman could come true and just have, but we've got to get some NGOs ready for the thermonuclear humanitarian
crisis over there. Wes, I see you going. Go ahead. What are your thoughts on all of this?
You know, I think you guys are exactly right with this. This is typical Democrat warmongering that we're seeing here. And as I said, I tweeted out yesterday, I'm going to get ahead of this one. World War III didn't start itself. I mean, here we are with a floundering administration that now has caused global catastrophe before our eyes. And I'm just reminded by something that President Trump always used to say, peace through strength. When America is strong, the world is strong. When America is weak, the world is weak. And the world is a much less safe place. And we're seeing that right now in Ukraine. And then let's talk about, you know, why is Biden so worried about Ukraine? Well, Burisma.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Let me count the ways of why he's worried about this. And you've got Putin and you've got Biden trying to threaten Putin and tell Putin to stay in his lane and not interfere and not get involved. Like anybody thinks Biden has any control over what happens on the world stage.
Right. Well, not only that, he's not allowed to talk about it, right? Remember, first he said, well, a little incursion would be okay. And then his people said, no incursions. And then yesterday he said he couldn't take questions because they would ask him about Russia.
Well, Wes, you're wonderfully situated to be drafted. I think you're turning 18 pretty soon.
I haven't even signed up for selective service yet. And I'm scared to death to do that right now.
I'd be working on that Achilles tendon and find a good doctor. I know it's bothering. You can feel it hurting you right now.
Really was bad. I think I tore it dancing last night.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
I think that was it. I'm really in immense pain. My heart is just, my watch says I'm having arrhythmias right now.
The whole thing, you know, I see we got Casper Stockham has a solution. We'll get to him after you. But, you know, Wes, let me actually use this point to mention Wes is with Laurel Eimer for Congress.
You have her opponent on.
Odlin is coming on at 3:30. Mm-hmm. So just in fairness, we had Laurel on and always welcome everybody there. I mean,
we have endorsed, however.
Where do you think this goes? Or do you think, like I said, my theory is the Biden administration probably hasn't thought much beyond getting all the bad news off of the head lines and just kind of distracting people for a while. I mean, where do you think this goes?
You know, I think that, and this is going to sound terrible, but I also think it's the truth, is I think that this is a play to try and get some publicity to the administration. You know, I think that this is a way to try and save their poll numbers. If they can go to war with another country and come out relatively on top of that, I think that it says, oh, well, he's strong, he's competent, he's capable, right? I think that's exactly what's happening. Now, reminder, the president has to go before Congress before he can declare war and do
yesterday.
Literally, that's how they're acting, right? I mean, they're just like,
what's the last time we got a war declaration? It's the Korean War. Well, how many wars have we had since then? Lots.
Exactly. I mean, I loved what you said, Chuck, at the beginning of this, is that we've been out of war for, what, 3 months? And now we're
way too long. Way too long.
Yeah. Wes, thank you so much. Say hey to your mother for us, too, okay?
I will. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, then Casper, I saw you were there on Zoom. You said you have a solution to the crisis.
He's got the flag going. He's got his AK-47.
What do you think, Casper? I mean, have you been losing sleep for months over Ukraine Putin building up stuff? Are you kind of as surprised as us to wake up this morning and realize we're on the verge of war for no apparent reason?
No, very good reason.
Well, I have not been losing sleep, but I'm also not surprised at all that this is going on. Real quick, what I think could have happened or maybe still could happen if we had an actual president running our country is Putin has said that he doesn't want Ukraine in NATO. As Chuck said, NATO doesn't want Ukraine in NATO, right?
We should go to war about this, though. Yeah. There's no question. This 100 million people is nothing.
And we also don't want to go to war. So the simple solution is, to say to Russia, say, look, let's sign a treaty. We, for the next 10 years, we will guarantee that Ukraine will not be in NATO. But if you invade Ukraine, then they're going to automatically be included in NATO. So then we say, You know, so Russia can say, okay, so for 10 years, Ukraine is not in NATO. So Russia's happy. Ukraine's happy because they're now still protected. NATO's happy because Ukraine is not going to be in NATO and they don't want them in NATO.
Right.
And the U.S. saves face.
There you go. So, but what's in it for Hunter Biden?
Yeah, what about Hunter? What does Hunter get out of this?
I know, we give
what
him some
What does
art.
Hunter get out of
we
this?
We give Ukraine some
okay,
art.
Okay, but here's what Biden and Hunter get out of this. They get to act like they actually know what they're doing in saving our country from a war.
Yeah.
And they still get to control Ukraine and still have their hands in the pot. So everybody's happy.
Well, can the Ukrainian Arts Council buy, you know, like a couple $1 million worth of Hunter Biden art that we lend them on some
Middle East program? Well, yeah, because everything will continue as normal.
You know, right.
Normal
corruption well, you know, that makes continue. Sense. And, you know, and again, I kind of think this is just watching the Biden administration. And even Ted Trimpa on Friday said he doesn't really think anyone that I'm paraphrasing him, but knows what they're doing or is in charge. I really do. I think they're like, guys, we need, well, I know he'd probably object a little bit to that, but I mean, they're like, guys, we're being clobbered. 72% of the people think we're going wrong. Your poll numbers, if it's at 30, what did somebody say? 30 is the new zero. I mean, you know, he's, and we got it, and nothing good is on the horizon. Literally
except
in that moment, they're like, what's
except
a war?
A good war.
Let's get a war. Then they can, of course, start banning all of us from YouTube for not wanting to go to war and censoring us and call us domestic terrorists.
We'll all be in jail.
But I think, I don't think they thought much beyond getting some of the bad news out of the headlines. I mean, your solution seems fairly smart since, like you guys point out, NATO doesn't want Ukraine. Putin doesn't, I mean, it's pretty easy to
say. So we're going to war to stop something that nobody wants anyway.
That isn't going to occur anyway. There is no better reason to go to war than that. That shows we're altruistic. That shows we're kind-hearted people. We're willing to kill 100 million people over nothing.
Over nothing.
That is, you know, that shows you've got the liberal, progressive mind thought.
Well, and you know, one thing too, Casper, I'll point out that we're getting ready to go to war with Russia. Right now, thanks to Biden administration policies, the United States gets 10% of our imported oil from Russia.
Yeah.
It's like, well, maybe we should solve that before we go to war. I mean, will they still, maybe we could put that in the treaty. Oh, by the way, if we do go to war, you'll still keep selling us oil at good prices, right?
Right.
All right. Well, Casper, thank you very much. Hey,
wait,
while we've got you, I'd just love to promote the stuff that you are doing. You want to talk real quick about your organization and what you have going on?
Yeah. So I run America First Republic, and we are a grassroots training and support site for candidates who don't get support from their party normally. So we have some classes. We're working on some online classes. The next one's not going to be till April, but we've got some online curriculum we're developing as well. So just stay tuned.
The war will be over by then.
The war will be over. We can get back to training. You can go to afrnow.us. afrnow.us.
All right, Casper, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
All right.
Anybody else over on Zoom, feel free. Like I said, we have Eric Odlin coming on at 3:30. But anyone else wants to comment too, go ahead and put it in the chat, or you could go ahead and just unmute yourself. Sandra says, hey, Casper, thank you. It's great to have you doing all the things that you're doing. And let's see, this is from Wes. Oh, yeah, he's right. Biden's approval rating in Colorado is at 36%. I'm sure they think that war will help that go up. You know, I do. And again, I just think what's going to happen is we're going to have all this talk about war. The media is going to jump all over it because they
already
said, yeah, well, even more so. I'm going to play you here. I'm going to play one thing and I'm going to predict that this changes. So over the weekend, Chuck Todd was expressing some skepticism about war, but he's going to have to stop that out. If we could please play the Chuck Todd soundbite,
Thomas. It's starting to piss people off here.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is Europeans are not aligned in how fortified of a response do they want to have? How much skin in the game do they want to have to protect Ukraine beyond rhetoric and the talk of sanctions? And, you know, this is, I think, a debate that's going to be in this country a little bit. You know, does the United States care more about Europe's security than Europe? And I think that's a fair question to ask at times, because Europe right now is not united with the same level of concern about Russia as we have.
And that's yourself why, because again, and I'm predicting by next Sunday, NBC is going to be full into the whole war, right? They're going to be totally supporting it. Again, I'm just putting this out there, and people may disagree with me, and I'm sure the domestic terrorists people will be coming after me, but I don't think this has anything to do with national security.
Of course it
doesn't have anything to do with Ukraine, doesn't have anything to do with Europe, doesn't have anything to do with Russia. It has everything to do with a crushing, crashing, plummeting domestic situation here that there are no answers for. There's no quick answer for COVID. Well, there is, but they won't do it, right? There's no quick answer for inflation. It's just going to get worse, particularly now that we make truckers have to be vaccinated. Now it looks like railroad workers are going to go on strike. That should help things. I mean, you know, everything is going to fall into pieces here. And there's the only thing, again, as somebody has said, a war, right? That would be good. I mean, at least, and it really has worked. It's like in the movie, the Firefly Girl, nowhere to be seen on the website or the headlines. If you look around at the news sites today, nobody's talking about inflation or COVID or any of the bad things going on. They're all talking about escalating crisis. It's going to be a World War III, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how they end it, but I don't think they've worried about that, right?
Well, who cares how it ends? You know, what could go wrong? I mean, what's the worst thing that happened? Right. A thermonuclear war. That's it. I mean, you know, you gotta get your perspective in there, but Biden looks strong and tough, and we've got 8,500 people in ready alert. And
right.
So that they're not actually called up or anything, but they have to be ready. In their own mind, they have to be ready to be sent to the Polish border with Ukraine or Russia, I guess it would be. And then we'll just see.
They're going to start embedding reporters on the ships. Ooh. And then you're going to see reports from there. And it's the best kind of war because, I mean, no one will, like, if you see the movie, they shoot a video and they show this girl. They just totally make up the background. You can do that on your Zoom call. Well, now we could put a Ukrainian village. Well, maybe we should do that.
Yeah,
put a burning Ukrainian village being invaded by Russia in the back of our Zoom.
Well, have you
thing.
Seen the pictures of the of on television of the Ukraine Russia disputed area and stuff? They had the tanks going through.
And who knows what that's from, right? I mean, who knows what that's from? So it's insane. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today, though, is because they're going to try to make it a thing. And we cannot, Eric when we get him on here, you can't trust Republicans because the Republicans are just as happy. I mean, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, I'm sure they're
Liz
all happy.
Liz Cheney loves a good war.
Oh, yeah.
She just loves a good war. She'd be so happy. She was so depressed when we got out of Afghanistan. She couldn't stand it. She had to have another drink.
Yeah, I mean, you notice because they don't actually have a plan for getting people out of Ukraine. That would be
I thought it was excellent advice. You should plan to get out by commercial and other ones, because you're depending on us. You're depending on us to get you out. You ought to watch the little Afghan tapes when those planes last plane leaving and things blowing up. So don't rely on the good old
we're
U.S.
We're going to launch a war, nuclear.
Yeah, Lufthansa can get you out of there, maybe, but not the U.S. government. I mean, good God, you know. Use your noggin.
That's right. Hey, we're going to switch gears, although we'll ask about this. We have Eric Oglin joining us there. Eric, I see you're there, your audio and video up. Hey, welcome to the show. Thank you for your time.
I'm glad to be back, Chuck and Julie. How are you?
We're good. Eric is running as for the Republican nomination for CD7. Which was Ed Perlmutter's. Let me start off by asking you, the topic of the day. My theory is, have you ever seen the movie Wag the Dog, where they make up a war? It's because the president's pulling. Okay. I think that there's a little bit of that going on. They make up a video war to pump up the president's poll numbers, and it worked. And he was reelected. I think there's a big.
You ready to go back in there,
Army? Have you been stressed about Ukraine for months and months? Or are you kind of as surprised as me to wake up and find out we're, according to Alex Vindman, we're on the brink of a war as large as World War II in Europe? And we can't avoid it. So
I think it's absolutely absurd and extremely disconcerting, especially as a combat veteran who's seen some of the disasters of the last 2+ decades. I mean, Afghanistan is a great example. We need to be out of foreign entanglements. We need to be very judicious with force. I do believe peace through strength is the right policy. But what's happening in Ukraine, I mean, and the saber rattling of the Biden administration is ridiculous. And I would ask Congress to take steps to limit the president's power. I think there's some issues there. Freeze funding, you know, make sure that there's an authorization for war.
Let's not do an authorization for war.
No. I mean, but what they need to do is hold the president accountable. There shouldn't be a war altogether. We should not be getting involved in Ukraine. But what's happening is deeply concerning to me.
I'll ask you this question. If you know it, what is the last declaration of war we've done?
I think it was the Korean War, wasn't it?
Yeah, excellent.
We don't need no stinking
authorizations for war. We've had 70 years of quality wars without any declaration. None of that Constitution garbage.
This is from Thomas, our producer. War is the best mask of all. It covers up so much. Good point. Well, yeah, I mean, let me ask you, if you were elected, because sometimes we see in our elected officials, particularly, I would say, in Congress and a federal level, they're all part of the military industrial complex. So they get money from that. And, you know, they like war, right? I mean, war is good for their donors and things like that. But what kinds of things, I mean, I'm assuming you, from what you just said, that you would speak out against it. What kinds of things do you think you might be able to do?
I mean, in Congress, you could freeze funding. I mean, that is a major step that Congress can take to prevent, such actions. Would they do it under Nancy Pelosi and the way things are distributed? I think it's highly unlikely. I think they're looking for as much for an excuse for the failures of the Biden administration as anyone. But to think that, Eisenhower talked about the misplaced power of the military-industrial complex. I do think, to a great extent, there are those who want war for reasons that don't serve this country. And the fact that we've got elected officials who would precipitate such an event, especially so unnecessarily, is deeply disturbing, though we've seen it in the past. But that's why we need to elect wise leaders in office who will not misabuse American power and American service members and throw them off into Pollyannish adventures that don't serve the greater good and are based on false pretexts. So this is something that, you know, I've served in war, and most of our elected officials have not. In fact, most people running for office have never served, and I've served real combat tours. So I know what it means to bear that burden, both physically and psychologically. But when I left my company, when I left my Noble Energy, I was studying to become a counselor because I wanted to treat trauma victims, especially veterans. Yeah. And we need to stay out of foreign entanglements. We need to use economic means and diplomatic means to sort these things out and use force as a last measure. And I think we've got people in power who want to rush into war. I think that Biden is looking for any reason to cover up, as you were saying at the beginning, his absolutely disastrous administration. But that's no excuse.
No.
Well, let's turn to your campaign. I mean, since you announced at the beginning of the Senate, you moved over to the House, which turned out to be propitious because Perlman has...
Perlmutter.
Has dropped out himself. Time to pass the torch, as he said. And the seat is really one of the more vulnerable ones held by Democrats, especially since the redistricting. So that must, and it also makes it higher on the RNCC list, which makes it easier to get funds, whoever wins the primary.
Yeah, so I declared on the 27th of December, and then 2 weeks later, Ed Perlmutter announced his retirement. So I'm taking full credit for steering him out of the race.
Are you gonna sign on, get on by signature, or are you gonna go through the caucuses?
I am petitioning on at this point. I've pulled petitions. We're doing petition signing events all over the district. For me, and I know that a lot of staunch conservatives or Republicans question this, they're in favor of the caucus route. But for me, as I've mentioned from the beginning, this is not about my own personal gain. I never designed my life to be a politician. I never envisioned doing this. And I'm not going to jeopardize my mission because I can't predict what will occur in the assembly. I'm watching very closely what's going on in District 7 with the GOP in Jefferson County. I find it the divisiveness and the
I was in CD7, then we got transferred to CD8, but we have HD29, which is both Jeffco and Adams, and it's just a war.
There is a lot of infighting in the Republican Party. I don't want to be brought into that fray. I am not doing this for the Republican Party. I'm doing this to serve my country in a time of crisis. And petitioning on is the surest route to be on the ballot. And at the end of the day, I'm on the hook for the money it takes to petition. It's not a cheap endeavor.
No, no. How many signatures do you need?
You need, for a congressional district, you need 1,500 signatures.
Oh, that's not too bad. That's pretty. That's,
it's much more affordable than the Senate race.
Yeah.
Let me kind of pull up something you said where I want you to be able to explain this a little bit more, so that, you know, you weren't doing it for the Republican Party. Can you talk a little bit about your political history? I mean, I used to be a Democrat. Then I married Chuck and I was forced to become, no, I evolved.
Many torture sessions later.
I'll tell you a funny story.
Waterboarding sessions and finally.
That's not far from the truth.
We broke her.
I used to work out with my girlfriend who's a former bodybuilder, right? And she would put the weights on the thing. And I would be talking about, I apologize to everyone for this, Hillary Clinton. And she would put more and more weights on. And she'd be like, are you still for Hillary Clinton? I'd be like, no, no. But anyway, I mean, talk a little bit about your political background.
So, I mean, I grew up in an Army family, a very conservative, patriotic family. My dad's a retired major general, moved all over the country, all over the world. And then I was an Army officer, and then I was in oil and natural gas. And I've kept moving until we were able to put down roots here in Colorado. But for the most part, I was not, though I was paying attention to geopolitics and what was happening, and that influenced me significantly in the military and in working projects around the world in oil and natural gas. I wasn't active within the party. I mean, I am conservative. I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. That's my bedrock. I'm not ever going to violate that. And I've always voted Republican, but I was in Colorado. I was registered as an independent. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. Beginning of last year.
Okay. What made me
shift my affiliation? Mm-hmm. I think it was a recognition that I was going to get politically active, and I had just started this path, but also that I needed to pick a side. I couldn't sit on the fence. It's not effective. I want to be part of a team, and the fact is that the Republican Party represents my values. I mean, if you look at where I stand, I don't stand for those things. You can see them on my website. I stand for those because they're right, not because I call myself a Republican or have any specific label. I represent conservative values. That's who I am. I've always been that way. So
do you consider yourself pro-Trump?
That's a great question, Chuck. I think at this point, I pivot to focus on his policies. I am pro-Trump policies. The policies were highly effective. We had a secure southern border. We didn't have out-of-control crime rates. We didn't have a disaster in Afghanistan. We had a thriving economy. We were bringing industry back to the United States. His policies were highly effective. However, I recognize the divisiveness of his personality and his figure. And I've become much more aware of that as a person running for office than I ever was as a private citizen removed from the political arena. So I think it's a nuanced discussion. But I do find fault with some of his issues in terms of how he managed them in a way that wasn't statesmanlike, was divisive in nature, And we're seeing, I see all over Colorado, people who are triggered by Trump. And what, and whether we like it or not, we have to accept that reality if we're going to be successful in winning in Colorado.
So you'd, prefer that he not run again and somebody else be able to take the Republican standard bearer?
I would like to see Trump be a, to check his ego and work behind the scenes, not make it about himself, and further the saving of this country. And I think he could do that through his influence. I think he can do that through his media empire. I think he could be a leader that I want to see in the Republican Party. If there wasn't so much vitriol coming from the man lately.
You know,
so,
I gotta say, I go, Chuck and I talk about this, and I'll admit, I go back and forth on this, because on the one hand, you gotta wonder if somebody else might be able to carry, as you said, the torch forward. And on the other hand, hey, at least we know what we're getting with Trump, and he knows how evil and how bad it is. So I guess I'm just not, I mean, I just, it's a tricky question. I mean, I acknowledge that. And
I do believe that we're at a point where a house divided cannot stand. And the hatred and vitriol and division in this country will destroy this country if we don't find a way to get good leaders who can unify an office. And I am not saying that we should reach across the aisle with the likes of Nancy Pelosi or AOC or Ilhan Omar or Bernie Sanders, who are self-avowed socialists or communists. I am not recommending that. But this is an American problem.
Well, what about Mitt Romney? What's your view on him?
No, I'm kidding.
That was not.
That was Julie. For anyone listening on the podcast, right, we need to clarify. That was not Eric's response. That was Julie's response. Sorry, Eric.
No problem. I think that there are people in the Republican Party who are not serving Americans or only serving their own ends, have betrayed their oath to the Constitution and betrayed our conservative values. I think Mitt Romney's on that list. So I strive to hold to Reagan's 11th commandment. I think that we've got to find a way to get good, solid conservatives in office. But I would take a Manchin or a Sinema too, and I would work with them. And I also think that we've reached a point where we're not having honest dialogues in this country. Everything has become politicized to the extreme. We need to find a way to be balanced and to elect officials who will make the wisest choices for society and not just serve their own ends. So we need to create a climate of professionalism and statesmanship that existed under Ronald Reagan. He was very good about having conversations and then making the right decision.
Let me ask you, and Eric, I'll be honest with you, when the Perlmutter made his announcement, and then you put out a statement, and Christy Burton Brown and Laurel Imer put out a statement. I was critical of your statement. I mean, Laurel Imer and Christy Burton Brown basically said, hey, Perlmutter quit because he was going to lose, and go Republicans. And yours was, I guess, pulling off of your statesman thing, right? And you wanted to get rid of the vitriol. But my question, and so I appreciate what you're saying there, but here's my concern, and that is the Democrats don't play that way. It would be like trying to go to war and be a gentleman with somebody who's dropped being
with the
like
Nazis.
Droning you, right? It's like, well, yeah, that's not gentlemanly, but it's effective. And I guess that's my concern. And so tell me, how would you handle that? I mean, combining that
I think point one, I'm the only one who's served in war and served in combat. And I've demonstrated my fortitude and character on the battlefield. Okay. Nobody else can claim that. I've risked my life in this country. So there are very few who can actually honestly say that. I was willing to die for this country, and I still am. So how many, you know, so that's point one. Two, I know how to conduct myself justly in war by doing what is right and using judicious professional use of force. Now, we are in a different kind of war. We're in a war of information and an ideological war. And I think that in many ways, we're up against a Marxist or radical left ideology that is anti-human and disempowering and very, very problematic. However, by becoming like those in the opposition, we totally undermine our own principles and our effectiveness. I'm also a person of faith. I'm also a follower of Jesus Christ. So when I look to him as an example of human conduct, which means that we need to exemplify compassion and love in our fight by serving the truth. Okay. So I'm not going to kick a man on his way out of office. And at the end of the day, I am going to serve the constituency of District 7, which is 44% independent, 26% Republican, and the remainder Democrat. So I do need to be able to have a dialogue with those constituents who see things differently. And that is very important. It doesn't mean I agree with them, but that I'm open to listening. And I don't think the enemy, I want to also point out that the enemy is not our neighbor down the street who's affiliated as a Democrat. We have a government that is full of those who no longer are accountable to the American people. And in many ways are destroying this country through their atrocious or appalling policies that they are able to hide behind a veil of sincerity and compassion. That we need to find a way to recognize that this is an American problem, a Coloradan problem, and come together on principles that are common to all human beings. So, no, I didn't feel a need to attack Ed Perlmutter when he's on the way out. I'm focused on the future. I'm focused on the opposition that I'm going to be facing in the general election. And the fact is that there's nothing to be gained by adding more hatred or vitriol. I'm going to win this race with honor and integrity and character. And the voters are going to see that. And if they don't, then they're not going to elect me. But I don't think we're going to win by spewing more hatred. We need less of that.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Well, let's. I'll give you a compliment. When you were on Peter's show, our good friend
Peter Boyles,
and he tried to force you to do his official oath to Satan, which is Biden won and there wasn't any problem with the election. I must admit, you refused to be bullied. So bravo to you on that. Bravo to you on that.
Peter has tried to push me into that corner before. And Peter's become a friend of mine. So we can banter off air, but we have to agree to disagree on that point.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't like to agree to disagree.
he can be relentless.
We've only got a few minutes left, so I want to make sure to give you time. I mean, well, we've had Laurel on, we'll have you back on. I mean, feel free anytime. You've got some great communications people, as do all the candidates, and so I'm happy to talk to any of them.
Who has Colin Larson jumped in yet? No.
We don't know if he's actually going to enter. I the media kind of made a thing out of it when Ed Perlmutter announced his retirement, but I'm not concerned. I mean, my strategy does not change for no matter who's in the race.
But he hasn't officially announced, as far as you know.
He hasn't sent you an email. He's not. He didn't text you.
No, I don't know what's going on with him.
Okay. All right. Well, where can people find out more about you? If people want to help, if people want to donate, whatever, where should they go?
The best place to start is my website. I've got a phenomenal website with a lot of information. You can see where I stand. I'm pretty transparent. A lot of videos and did a recent telephone town hall meeting with 11,000 people. Talked about a lot of different issues. So you can know who I am but based on my website. It's Odland, AADLAND. forcolorado.com. Here you can see my last
name. There you go. All right.
Where to go?
All right. Hey, Eric, thank you for coming on.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
All right. There you go. Eric Odland for Colorado.com. If you want to get more information, and some of the, if you're still listening, some of the folks are saying, thank you, Eric. A lot of different kind of comments there. Sometimes guys, just so you know, we don't always have time to read them. And sometimes they just move so quickly.
We can't read them all, but they're their own legislature there where they banter back and
that's
forth.
That's right, exactly.
Without our interference. But it's going to be an interesting primary, I think.
I think
Laurel Eimer's got a lot of people on the grassroots side. And I think Eric was smart not wanting to go through the caucuses. And that will create some problems for him. But he's I'm sure he's thought about that. And it'll be interesting to see. It's grassroots.
It'll be interesting to see what Colin Larson does too, because that could be I understand and I totally respect what Eric says. He's got to run his own race, but that could be the kind of thing where that might split and Odland. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, he isn't Colin Larson.
No, I know he's not. Thank God for that. Yeah. Well, maybe Colin Larson won't get in. You know, maybe who knows what's going to happen there. It's interesting though.
Brittany Patterson, I think, will get in on the Democratic
side. I think she's announced that she has already.
She's about as awful on the Democratic side.
Can hope that she keeps running.
Yeah.
Because she's a terrible candidate. Easy one to campaign against.
Well, she's not so terrible. She hasn't been able to win all her elections, so. But you know, her heroin injection sites and everything else, maybe that's where the seventh is going, but
hopefully not. Yeah. Well, if the seventh is going for heroin injection sites, then actually, yeah, but it's pretty tough to be a Republican there anyway, right? Yeah, if that's what they approve of. Hey,
but he was right. I mean, the seventh CD7 is in an absolute war, and luckily I had COVID last week, so I didn't get
to go. You'd have to go to the meeting.
I didn't get to the meeting, but people were walking out, and that same thing happened in the
CD8.
CD8 was not a war, but HD29 is the one I couldn't go to, and they walked out, and so there is a real divide in the Republican Party. Real divide.
Hey, so thank you to Eric for coming on. Thank you to everybody for commenting on Ukraine. Although the president wants us to forget about COVID, we are not going to forget about it because there's a lot going on. We're going to have the great investigative columnist and reporter Michael Tao on with
him.
Us. If you haven't seen him before, you got to love him. Man, that guy knows his research. He called the Russia hoax years before anyone else.
He calls, he kind of, not the Russian hoax, but other ones.
And then it
ends up going, that is true.
That's totally true. Totally true. So he's coming up on Wednesday. We will see you all then. Everybody remember chuckandjulie.com. Thank you to our great producers at BBS Radio. We'll see you Wednesday.
Bye-bye, everyone.